doing on there? Oh, I end up in the ordnance officers' crew, and we had in the gun, big gun turrets. They had the dog dismantling, and they were, for some queer reason, they were recovering all the oil seals from the hydraulics, all the rubber rings and all that, and we're taking all of them out. And they're quite interesting, if you're mechanically minded. It's like a factory in one of them turrets. And the machinery in that is terrific. Anyway, we were there, and then we had to make some little things that go on the quarter deck for put markers on, the flags on, the screw, and we had to make these brass things. The captain knew what they were doing. They turned up these brass things to put in the quarter deck.
Wilf Turner, end of reel 5. Wilf Turner, reel 6. So carry on, you were putting the brass screws.
Yeah, putting all these brass fittings on in the deck, and we had to make these stanchions and the fittings on top. And I had the job on the lathe, turning out a lot of brass cones. Then we had to cut them in half, and they were then sandwiched between what looked some medieval battle axe. It's made out of white metal, rather extravagant. And they were positioned on the quarter decks so that when they could screw these stanchions in place, it was markers for when the trainees and that had their parades. That was all it was for. Yeah. Or give us something to do, I suppose. Mm. Yeah, we stayed on that one. And then after a long time, I got put on the trot boat. It was a motor fishing vessel, or MFV. We were literally doing like a taxi shuttle service all around Plymouth Sound. From Saltash Bridge right down to the breakwater. Mm. And all the stops in between, I keep going round and round. And the signal stairs.
It was like a
shuttle bus service. Mm. We're doing that, we lived on board. That was quite comfortable. It's a nice big MFV. And I can see that was went on saying that for quite a while. Remember one famous occasion, the perishing cold, and we got and the ropes I had to tie up, the lines I had to tie up at the bow end, and they froze, and I had a dickens of a job trying to tie up. And afterward, we were at Signal Steps, I think, was it Plymouth. And I had my job tied up. Anyway, afterwards, when we got back, the coxswain, he come up and said, "Hey, what the hell do you think you've been doing, Jan? I mean, this tubby should know how to tie a ship up." I said, "Well, sure." He said, "Look at me problem. I picked the rope up, done the Indian rope trick, about 10 feet up. It's this rope, we, you know, only about 8 or so diameter. And held it straight up. Mm. It was frozen stiff. And that was salt water on it, too. And he looked at it, caught over and broke it. Oh, crumbs, he said, "I'm sorry." He said, I didn't realize you would have had that problem. And you know what we should have done, actually? We picked the rope up and bashed it on the deck and cracked it all up. Mm-hmm. Not left it lying out nice and neat until you got there. But, of course, we went around doing that for a long time. Mm-hmm. Must have been a long time. We had to leave from the place, from that thing.
Yeah.
And then I'll leave from it, and we carried on. I remember one rather amusing instance. Come back, we had to bring their chaps offshore. And there's one young mate in there. He was as drunk as a lord. He went up the gangway on all fours. He was so drunk. And the skipper was still at the top, and he said, "That drunken rating, come here." He had a funny sort of falsetto voice. "Drunken rating, come here." What he didn't realise, said rating was so damn drunken, he didn't know he was a drunken rating. We give him a hell of a cheer as he went up the gangway.
Was there much drinking going on?
Don't know, we were never involved in drinking much. Mm. I could get a hangover on 2 glasses of beer. One of those conditions. Other folks would get drunk as a lord, next day they were still quite normal. I was a good thing in a way, I suppose.
Oh, I think that's a good thing. Was drunkenness a problem ever? I mean, you mentioned one drunkenness.
No, not a lot, no. You just get the odd one, but very little.
So you stayed on the MFE?
Yeah, till I actually got debarked from it.
You did?
Yeah.
So what were your feelings about leaving the Navy?
Relief, actually. It was rather funny. I volunteered for the Navy, partly I didn't fancy being in the Army, and also to get away from some very strict and, on very many occasions, very violent parents. My father was a 5'11", 14 stone, and not much fat. He was very, very powerful. I can remember him, I'd done somewhat slightly wrong, doing schoolboy pranks, and he would say, "Come here, I want you," and he'd deliver a right uppercut straight to your chest, and you would go 10 to 15 feet before you hit the ground and end up in a heap. And that was just the hors d'oeuvres. And one famous occasion, I went, I don't know, still don't know to this day what I'd done wrong. I think what it was, other chaps, kids would do summit, they would then, and father was the only one that would listen to their, whoever it was, and they'd pull their beansticks up or something. I had the blame for all of it. I was often not there. But father was the only one who would listen to anybody else. And I volunteered joy to me in a way that time. The war was a godsend. It gave me a concrete excuse to escape, which I did. And father was so damn annoyed that he said, when he found I joined the Navy, because I joined the Navy and then told him, he says, a man out in a young chap in the Army out in India from Eggerly said his father changes his bed every week and airs it every night in case you come home on leave sudden. There'd be nothing like that for you, you bugger. If there's a bed there, you can lie in it. If he didn't, you can get on back where it's come from. And the result was I've never, ever been homesick. Wherever I am, that is home. I moved somewhere else, that is home.
So you were quite happy in the Navy, really, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah. And, yes, you haven't said that. When a demob come up, I couldn't get out fast enough.
Did you consider staying on in the forces? Transferring to the Army? Or?
If I'd gone in the Air Force, I think I would have stayed in. Talking to Air Force chaps, I think I would have stayed in. I don't think I would have been an air crew, although one RAF instructor used to live here. He's an instructor on meteors. He said, "I could, will you ride a motorbike and go up that church tower, I could got you flying easy."
But you didn't consider staying on in the Navy?
No.
What did you imagine you would go and do then? How would you earn your living?
Oddly enough, I was on leave one day. I was cycling back from the street back home to Glastonbury. And the personnel officer in Moorlands, who knew me, was just going back to the factory from dinner. He lived just up the road, opposite the factory, up the wrong way. And he called me, he said, "Oh, what's long have you got to go for your leave?" I said, "Don't know." He said, "Demob number's 48. Navy, that was quite low. And he said, "Tell you what," I said, when you get your demob leave, come and see me, work out how long your money's going to last," about a month. And he said, "And your job's waiting for you." Mm-hmm. I went back as a cutter, then after a while I transferred to maintenance.
So where did you go to be demobbed?
HMS, it was in HMS Drake. Mm-hmm. It was a Drake or, no, an offshoot of Drake. Over St. Bude away somewhere. I forgot what it was called now. There was a DA at a section there. Right. Entirely for demobbing people.
What was the process like?
Very perfunctory examination, you know. Nothing missing. Your health seemed reasonable. It seemed all right. You feel fairly fit and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But that was it. Follow through a place and pick what suit you wanted. put it in a box for you, and give you all your documentation, and sent you on your leave. That was it.
Were you optimistic when you left?
Oh, since I already had promised me job back, I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. I came, a good thing or a bad thing, I was, you know, quite pleased to think you had the job, because Fowler was a bit different then, because as I went away as a rather skinny 18-year-old, I'd come back a bit bigger built, a bit stronger, and a bit rougher, I think. And Mother told me just before she died, your father, when you come out in the Navy, he said your father was scared of you. And also, one of the souvenirs I brought back from Normandy was a couple of yards of machine gun ammunition. I don't know whose it was, but the inscription on the end was in a foreign language, and it was rimless. And I tried, what I was doing was pulling the bullets out, pouring the cordite out, and then firing the percussion cap with a nail and a hammer. It's a bit of fun. And then one day I put this, I found this home guard rifle out. He's rimless. They're American. They were rimless. So I tried the empty case in the gun. And he pulled it back out all right. Then one of the bullets I had, he dropped through the barrel. So me being an idiot, I put a live round in it and fired it. There's a holes and it worked. As a holes in Mother's dustbin, you're there to prove it. Next time I come back off leave, I'll always say, hey, where's my souvenir to the ammunition? I chucked that in the river over Cold Harbour Bridge. I think that got found sometime later, and they often wondered how it got there.
Yeah.
But,
did you ever have any sort of times when you really missed the Navy?
Yeah, I did quite often, actually, yeah. Especially when I was in the factory, and I think I thought, shall I or shan't I? But
what was it you missed about it?
Not beyond the watchful eye of my parents. Although then I got demobbed. I got 22 when I got demobbed.
And did you get your own place to live, or
going to? No, I was still living with my parents, and then that. Digs or accommodation is very, very hard to come by. In fact, a lot of married couples, young couples got married, they were still living with their parents, or some people, they might have had an attic in their house, and often they were letting out their attic to young couples, and that it was very, very difficult. And you know, as a single chap, you didn't stand a dog's chance to hell of getting any accommodation.
So you stayed sleeping at more. Working at Moreland.
Yeah.
How long did you stay there for?
Took shut down.
Really?
Which
was when, in the
80s? I was the last Moreland's mechanic in the place. And I bled all the airlines, let out all oil pressures, shut down all the mains electric, reported the receiver. December 22nd, about 1982, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Christmas 82.
Yeah.
Just walked out of the place.
Did you take retirement then?
No. No, I won 65 until 89.
Yeah.
Another.
What did you do then?
What happened then? Oh, ringing around looking at adverts. And I saw one. You end up. A lot of us chaps had trouble with our wives. If we couldn't get a job very quick, they'd say, oh, you don't want a job, don't want a job. And I had that flung at me. And I was ringing about most inopportune things. There's a lot of jobs advertised along that time in the local rag. And I rang up one chap, Douglas Berryman. He had the Western England Automatic Piano Company. And I did the wing, I just saw this, he had a phone number. He was living at Penard. So I just rang him up, and his wife answered. So she took me number, and Douglas rang me back later on. He told us to come on out, so we'll have a chat. He was advertising for a piano technician or an organ builder. I'm neither, but I just wondered with what I was, could I have been useful anywhere? And anyway, went out, and he said, yeah. He just opened up a unit in Curieville Place in Wells. Mm-hmm. He said, I could do with you for about 6 weeks to set up a workshop.
Right.
So I set up, I went in and set up the workshop. I stayed there about 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And making myself quite useful.
Mm. Do you think the experience you'd had in the Navy, did that help you in the rest of your life?
Since I've been widowed, it's helped a great deal. And as several chaps I know have been widowed recently, the last few years, they said their experience in the Navy did help.
Mm. In what way?
You had to be very self-sufficient, and you had to do all your washing, ironing, mending, and that, and darning your socks and all that. And my mother taught me to darn socks when I was still at school. And
do you think it helped you in your working life?
Not so much perhaps in the working life. It may have helped a lot outside, generally. Mm. You know, in fact, having been in the service, it brings you out. You see the difference between chaps who've been in the service and chaps who haven't. Mm. You could tell them. And somebody said you can always tell chaps who've been in the service. Mm. In fact, there's one of my complaints is during the war, there was a lot of chaps especially the conscientious objectors, got given 3 white feathers. Mm. And we sort of crawl out of our uniform straight away in the civvies, wander around. None of us ever got 3 white feathers. So I said to Mother one day, where we go, we said, wander down West Nels all over the place in civvies. He said, come off it. Mother said, you only got to look at you to see what you are.
There's a mark there.
Yeah, it's marked, yeah.
Lovely. Well, it's been a fascinating tale. Thank you very much. Is there anything you want to add? I think you've told a very, quite a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll just say thank you very much indeed.
It's okay.
Thank you for talking to us. That's Wilf Turner, End of Reel 6.